extra sheets, maybe make a pile for welcome one of the extra sheets. Okay, we're done with the preliminaries and on to the main event. First Jew appears on the stage, Jewish history begins, theology, monotheism is launched in Parshas Lech Lecha, the pilgrimage to Eretz Yisrael begins. We're now officially beginning. And just a word as to how to read the next couple parshios or even the rest of the Torah. Who are the Avos? When we read about their lives, should we be assuming their lives were similar to ours and imputing to them the same motives and the same experiences? Or should we be reading them like angels and their behavior is impeccable and their intentions and connotations are very different than ours? And there's a lot of polarity in the way people read them. And of course, the answer is both. How could it be both? On the one hand, just to treat the Avos with the same standards and the same yardsticks as we treat ourselves and we experience our own lives, it's not just religiously questionable. It's intellectually dishonest. These were people who lived lifestyles, discovering a Kodesh Baruch Hu, metaphysical lifestyles. Ramban says, Maisavo Simin Labanim doesn't just mean that they set moral examples. Well, if Avram was kind, we should be kind. But they were literally Maisim Merkava. They carried Hashem in this world. They created history. Places they traveled to carved out templates in history. When Avram visited a location, it became more easily acquired by the Jewish people. They spoke to Hashem. They spoke to Malachim. They lived manifold layers of intention and awareness that we can't even begin to imagine. So just simply reading the lives of these Avos and Imos the way we would read about ourselves and imputing to them the type of motives and flaws, and sometimes it becomes salacious, and reading the seedy parts, you see he did this and she did that. I don't find it immoral more than I find it just intellectually embarrassing. It's just arrogating a certain type of reading that's simply incorrect. So we have to read them as if they were superlative people well beyond our current and human experience. However, the Torah does present a story. And if the Torah presents a story at a literary level, it wants us to learn from that story and apply it to our own lives. And if we just assume that the Avos were malachim, and every time they took a decision, it was based on esoteric, cosmic, metaphysical intentions rather than human experiences, human challenges, then they have no bearing for our own lives because we're not those people. We're not angels. We don't live at that level. And we want to try to draw from their lives and their struggles. So you read them both ways. On the one hand, when you read a Medrash or you read a Zohar and there are kavanos and decisions that we certainly lay far beyond human comprehension, human experience, because they were operating at levels that we can't even imagine. But on the other hand, the Torah casts them not as angels, but as human beings. And human beings go through struggles and don't begin their lives as perfect and become more perfect as they grow. And we want to try to model ourselves, not just after these elusive, surpassing examples, but after people who lived in this world and struggled in ways that resonate with our struggles. And by way of example, I want to discuss Avram with you tonight. But another word of preface and another word of a disclaimer. There's a fundamental difference between saying Avram Avinu sinned and Avram Avinu made an error in judgment or a miscue or a mistake. To just impute a sin, a chet, an avera, to Avram Avinu without basis, without seeing in Chazal or in the Ramban or in a Rashi, I'd be very, very uncomfortable. To say that a person makes a mistake of judgment, that's to be human. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's an important moral message and mental message. The best lesson you can pick up this year is you make mistakes, just say you're sorry. It's like saying good morning. It's like deciding what to eat for a living. You're a human being. You're going to make a lot of mistakes every day of your life. And if you have to defend this facade of perfectionism, you waste a lot of energy charading as someone you're not. If you accept your fallibility, you just say, I made a mistake, I apologize, I came up short. But that's probably the definition of being a human being. You come up short all the time. And just apologize for it and you move on. So when we read Avram, to say that I'm committed a chayt, I will not use those words unless I see it in a Gemara or a Medrash. To say, well, should Avram have behaved this way? And why did he behave this way? And what can we learn? And how did he change? And how can we learn from his change? Because of the way we read him as a human being. I think that's a reverential way to read Avram. So again, take a few steps back. In general, I'd like you to be capable of reading the stories of our Avos and Imos on both levels. On the one hand, I think factually they live lives at spiritual levels of consciousness and interaction that is hard for us to imagine. And factually, there was probably a madrega that they achieved. But the Torah writes a story of human beings, whether it's the complete facts or just a narrative from a human perspective, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu a Rachem? Of course not. Hashem doesn't have emotions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu a father? Of course not. He doesn't have emotions. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to interact with him as if they were the emotions that we know so well that deepen our experience. So there's a story about the Avos that we're meant to learn from. And let's study Parshas Lech Lecha tonight. But I only have one rule and one condition. Normally I'm very lax. You can walk in, walk out, leave early. No one leaves the shiur early tonight. Because if you just hear half the shiur, it's heresy. You got to hear the whole shiur tonight. Okay? No one leaves the shiur tonight. Please. Okay. If we study Avram carefully and honestly, hope this isn't being recorded. If we study Avram carefully and honestly in Parshas Lech Lecha, it's a little surprising to see some of his behavior. I'm not going to be comical about it just to make this a light shiur and a funny shiur. But put all the comedy aside, it comes up short rather frequently, consistently almost. In fact, you can almost characterize Lech Lecha that way. And you're forced to ask yourself, why and how? And why does Torah present it? Even if he did come up short, Torah doesn't record or document every dinner that Avram ate. It documents the important things. And maybe these things should be suppressed or should be ignored or rendered peripheral. Let's try to chart the career of Avram in Parshas Lech Lecha. Kadosh Baruch Hu promises Avram grand, majestic opportunities. This is your land. This is your legacy. You are the man who will start a religion in this land. And immediately famine erupts. This is your moment to show your face. This is your moment to reciprocate. Kadosh Baruch Hu challenges you to the mountain and you respond by standing tall and defiant in the face of adversity. You don't flee the first time there's a challenge in the land. I remember in the early 2000s when the Intifada was at its pitch. And of course no one judged anyone, but the people who did decide to stay here felt that it was an act of faith. And we weren't just choosing to stay because we couldn't relocate or move. We felt like we had to be here, and this is a Kadosh Baruch Hu challenging us with any sign. We wore bulletproof vests every time we traveled through Yerushalayim and during the really difficult moments in the early 2000s, which you probably read about or heard about. My sixth child, the daughter, is named Tamima Emunah. Tamima because, Baruch Hashem, she was healthy, and Emunah because she was born in 2001, I think, around that time. I felt like this was an active Emunah. And you wonder, shouldn't this narrative conclude with Avraham struggling a little bit, eking out some food from the land, maybe helping others deal with the famine and staking his claim to the land, even during a time of famine. And he bolts. So from a practical standpoint, it makes sense. But you'd expect Avram to operate not just practically, but ideologically. And if it were me, maybe my departure to Egypt would be explainable, justifiable. But it isn't me, it's Avram. And Avram represents something larger than himself in his own plate and his own ability to sustain his family. And the Ramban calls him at that. So let's take a look at this table. And at the end of the shiur, you'll realize why there's a table. In Parshas Lech Lecha, the Ramban writes in the first box, Veda, ki Avram Avinu chata chet gadol b'shkaga. So the Ramban actually calls it a chet. It talks about Sarah, which we'll get to in a moment. V'gam, the second part of the Ramban, yitziaso min haretz, his departing Eretz Yisrael. Shenitztav olav b'tchilo. This is part of his legacy. To Hashem Elokim, Shebacharte B'Avram, Betzeitzem Yerakastim, Samba Shmo Avraham, Metzalsal Zavar Nemofa Necha, Sherezisicha Meirakastim. It's not just a mission in general, it's a geographically tethered mission to be in Eretz Yisrael. Avon Asher Chata. It's a sin. Ki Elokim Barav Yifdenu Mimavas. And the Ramban says, and he has no source for this, Al Hamaisa Hazeh Nigzar Al Zaro Hagalus Bi'eretz Mitzrayim. It was such a severe and austere sin that the onish was the Galus Mitzrayim, or at least it was part of the cause of the Galus Mitzrayim. So this is his debut. This is his first moment. And I won't use the F word, fail. I can't use those words about Avraham Avinu. But I just, this is not how I expected it to end. If you would have told me, Avram is selected, and he migrates to Eretz Yisrael, and he's challenged, finish the scene, stand stout and tall, perseverant in the face of adversity, and proves that the selection was warranted. It's not how it is. But there's a consolation prize, because he's the Afamon Goyim. So even if he has to leave Eretz Yisrael, he's got some business to attend to. His job is not just to live in Eretz Yisrael, his job is to inspire the world, teach them monotheism, integrity, honesty, morality. So, okay, he has to leave. Maybe it's a little, just a mousetrap for him to go to Egypt, which is the cradle of cultural center of ancient civilization, to teach these new lessons and to inspire the natives, to inspire the aborigines, teach them a little bit about culture and monotheism. Doesn't end so well. He's quote lying. Imri la'achosia l'manita li'ba'bore. Again, where's the emuna? So, she's my wife, but there's something called the sanctity of marriage. And I believe in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and I'll reject and rebuff any attempts to violate my marriage. And of course, he's putting Sarah in harm's way. He's not telling a lie, I've got a business meeting, we have to make a quick exit. He's putting Sarah in the crosshairs in order not to become violated or persecuted. And the Ramban calls him on this also. Let's go back to the Ramban, the first part of the Ramban in box one. That he endangers his wife because of his own legitimate fears. Avram should have trusted the Ribono Shel Olam. I would never, ever, ever say these on my own. I'm going to say, hey, maybe it's a mistake in judgment. And in theory, part of the chait that caused Galus Mitzrayim. And as I mentioned before, he doesn't just lie, but it's counterintuitive or counterindicated for what you'd expect. This is his encounter with Paro. You expect Paro to walk away inspired, converted, a little bit more attuned to Avram's theology and revolution of religion. And what happens is a lot of alienation and hostility. By Yikra Paro Le'Avram, box 2, Mazos Asisale, there's accusations, there's recriminations, Lama Amarta Chosihi, and basically it's a quick exit. Vaitzav, Alav Paro Nashim, Vaishachu Osav Yashtav, it calls the Secret Service, get him out of the country as fast as he can. Not only is Paro uninspired, when you expect Avram to have some impact and some influence, but Avram's kicked out of the land. The exact opposite. So all of a sudden, all of our expectations are dashed. If you had told me there was a famine, I would have said one of two things would happen. Either Avram would prove his faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or if he has to leave, he'd use that opportunity to begin executing his mission. And neither happens. And then the third scene, Parshas Lech Lecha. Avram and Lot have, as we call them, first world problems. They're each very wealthy. Not enough pasture land. Halavai is a big problem that we're facing. So let's say, I don't know, let's say Noam Paraman. So you come and say, Rebbe, I don't like the yeshiva. I don't like your shir. I don't know, maybe the asthma now in the air isn't good for me. I want to go learn in the mirror. I say, great. I'll help you get there. I'll arrange to have a friend there who gives a shir there. Gives him his shir. Help you get a dira. It'd be fantastic. You want to go to Tzfat. You want to learn in a more Kabbalistic yeshiva. Be very happy. But if Akiva Cooper comes over to me and says, Rebbe, I'm having a hard time in Gush. I Maybe I want to go to Las Vegas for a year and drink and gamble. I'm lying on the train tracks. I'm saying, no, you got to stay. What can I do? How can we work this out? I'll give you a better share. I'll serve better food in my pod. Please don't. I mean, Lord's choosing stone. He's not going to care beyond. He's supposed to be bringing people into your fold. And now he's hemorrhaging. Work it out. Find some solution. Very, very noble of you. Yema smol ve'mina. Yeah, of course it made me comical. Yema yemin ve'smila. You go your way out. You want to take stone? Sure. And it's not a secret. Torah's pretty clear. Box 3, the last pasuk. Ve'anshei stone, ra'im b'chatein. It's like Avram didn't know. Oh, I thought there was a deal. I mean, that stone. I think that's the yeshivim stone. I mean, that stone. Oh, should have told me. Everyone knows. Everyone's fully aware. So it seems like the train's running backwards. Express train is supposed to be running forwards. All aboard. Join us. Land of hope and dreams. And have people disembarking from the train. People close to you. Again, is this a chet? Can I point to an avera that Avram violates? No, I don't think anyone can. Even if you were disrespectful, I mean, just intellectually, there's no chet here, but it's just... Again, it's not how it... You prompted me and said, Avram has a squabble with his nephew, which at this point is his successor. What happens? Avram shows generosity of spirit, reconciliation, and peacemaking. Wait a second. None of that happens, and love disappears. Next scene. World War Zero. 4 kings and the 5 kings. Death all over. 13 years. Who's going to save the day? If not for the Avhamon Goyim. And his absence is thunderous. His silence is fulminating. Where are you? Again, I'm reading Parashat Lech Lecha, honestly. Not because I read it 15 times already. I'm just reading it for the first time. And I know that Avram has a world mission to demonstrate that religion is meant to advance the human condition and yield human welfare and prosperity. So what do? You end wars. Solve cancer or you end wars. One of the two. I don't think the cancer issue is really something they can deal with then. So you just put a war to rest. You intercede, diplomacy, then get involved. Sidelines. All of a sudden, a Monroe Doctrine. That's a lot for the Americans here. Isolationism. Not our war. Let Europe bleed to death while America prospers. So that's what happened. All of a sudden, isolationism. He only gets involved when it hits home. When load is captured. And then all of a sudden, he mobilizes and militarizes and gets involved. There's no hate here, but it's your job to be involved. It's your job to intercede. He doesn't answer the call. And then he gets even more intriguing because he triumphs. And essentially, this is his moment. He is a rock star. Everyone knows who this man is. You ask everyone, who is the man that quieted the guns of war, that ended the bloodshed that had ravaged humanity for 13 years. It's Avram. And he is a legend. And now people are impressionable. And this is his moment to inspire them and say, well, it wasn't me, it was Hashem, and I'll teach you about him. Just come and I will show you. And in fact, Melech Stone says, take my people. They're yours. I understand. It's like it's gift wrapped. You don't have to go out to Nigeria to join Chabad to find a couple Jews to be Makariv. They're coming to you. And they're inspired. And they're waiting. And they've seen the dark side of paganism and death and bloodshed. And you can offer them an alternative of life and dignity through monotheism. It's a slam dunk. And what does Avram say? Source number 4. So at this point,
Chazal get involved. It's not just the Ramban.
We're in the Darim Lamed Beis in that same box. I'm Rabbi Yavo, I'm Rabbi Lazar. Mipnei ma ne'anash arva mavinu v'nishtabdu banav l'mitzrayim masayim v'eser shanim. Why did we go to Mitzrayim 210 years? So he gives one shot, we'll see later. B'yochanan amar shehifresh b'nei adam milikani stachas kan v'yashlina. Who knows? And again, these are not people that end up living their lives prosperously and safely. They return to stone and they perish. So you could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives and converted them to be Jews. And they're being offered to you. Just say yes. The trends are too consistent to avoid. Time after time, this doesn't seem to be the conclusion we would have scripted for this man who was chosen as the Av HaMongoyim and the disseminator of monotheism. And then it starts to become personal between Avram and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Achar ha-dvarim ha'ila, hayad devar Hashem al Avram b'lachazel le'mor. Very, very cryptic scene. It's clearly a scene of HaKadosh Baruch Hu offering assurances to Avram. Al tira Avram anochi magin lecha. It's clear that Avram is a little uncomfortable. He doesn't have an inheritor. Hashem responds and says, you will have a child. And then it becomes a little bit unclear. They go outside, they look at the stars. Hashem offers the star-based promise, Ko Yizaracha. And then the pasuk at the bottom of box 5, Vayomar Hashem, and Avram says, Hashem Elokim, Bama Eda Ki Iroshena. Hashem has twice given you assurances, three times because of all the previous promises, but at least in this scene, it's twice reinforced, told you, taken you outside, showed you the stars. Avram says, how do I know? Now, if you know Rashi, and he sanitizes it, but cleanses it. He says, how will it happen? I know it will happen, but give me the roadmap. I want to be able to detect it. But if you're reading the Pasuk, the literal Pasuk, if Hashem promises you twice, me, I think it would be perfectly legitimate. My level of emun is in this. But Avraham Avinu, after all these direct communications, and he says, Bama Eda Ki Roshenu. And of course, I would never say this on my own, but once again, we turn back to Chazal, the continuation of that Gemara in Nedarim, on the back of page 2. Shmuel Amar, this is the same Gemara in Nedarim. Why do we go to Mitzrayim? Not because of the failure to be Machnes Tachas Kanfei Hashchina, and they Shehifriz Al Midos of Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Avram is doubting Hashem. Shenemar Bamei Dakir Hashem. Runs from Israel. Entangles his wife, creates animosity with Paro. Again, I'm highlighting. I can paint a different scene in Lech Lecha, and I'm lopsiding it. There are the shining moments in Lech Lecha. But where's the Avram we've heard so much about? And then the penultimate scene, not the final scene of Parshas Lech Lecha, the penultimate scene goes domestic. Things are tough. Sarah doesn't have a child. It's a complicated situation to bring in a midwife. Not a midwife, but a birth wife. Surrogate mother. Hagar plays that role. It's to be expected that tensions will simmer and erupt. And it's totally natural for Hagar to be dispatched because Sarah's his wife and Hagar can't remain there. Her expiration date has come. She's your wife. And even if she has to leave, there's a way for her to leave. And somehow that departure is very, very undignified for someone who's Avram's wife. But Yomar Avram El Sarai, once he's convinced, he listen to the language. Just listen to the language. Imagine this is the language describing me, so you don't have any preconceived notions. But Yomar Avram El Sarai, Hinei Shifchasech Biadech. Do what you want. She's yours. Torture her. Asila Talbinaach, do whatever you want to her. Sarah says, great, Vatanya Sarai. Sarah starts torturing her. Making faces at her, I don't know. Elad, you hold tight. Is it tag team? Whatever you want, we're ganging up on top. You hold them and I'll take a look. What's going on here? Asila, Sarah, I'll hold Hagar, you do whatever you want to her. Come on, like he did to your brothers, right? He says, so Hagar bolts, Hagar runs out as quickly as she can. What's she supposed to do? I can imagine a different way to let go of Hagar, to make an arrangement in witness protection program. So obviously I'm making this lopsided. And obviously I'm making it very comical, just to highlight it by hyperbole. But something's up here. Why does the Torah tell this tale? Why does the Torah tell a story that is clearly invites this type of reading, along with many, 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 many other readings? Trust me, if we read Parshas Lech Lecha in many, 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 many other ways, but this is a reading that seems almost inescapable. The answer is because people aren't born perfect. It's a journey towards perfection. And Avraham becomes the prism through which we see that perfection, because if you read the next Parsha, Parshas Vayera, it's a palindrome. Everything that happens in Lech Lecha, in which Avraham comes up short, almost everything occurs in Vayera. And in Vayera, all of a sudden you see a perfect man who succeeds in every challenge. It's literally a mirror image, two parshas, that's why the two boxes. And of course, the challenge for us is, how do you go from Lech Lecha to Vayera? That's how you grow. How do you go from being someone who's imperfect to someone who's as close to perfection as possible? How do you improve that? That's what we're trying to trace. And you can only trace that if you read Lech Lecha the way around. Because if Avram's born perfect, then there's no process. And there's no X factor that allows him to become perfect. So now let's read Vayera parallel to reading Lech Lecha, and you'll see that Torah isn't trying to diss Avram, and certainly I'm not trying to. But all of a sudden, everything that happens in Lech Lecha reoccurs or recurs in Parshas Vayera, but with a totally different outcome. So remember in Parshas Lech Lecha, when Avram has to descend to Egypt because of a famine, does that sound familiar to anyone in Parshas Vayera? Avimelech, he descends to Avimelech because of the famine. And just in case you don't realize that they're meant to be read in parallel, Avram decides to come up with a novel strategy. How am I going to protect Sarah in Parshas Vayera? I'll call her my sister. It's the exact same story. It's the same, but it's different. We don't have enough information, but the body language is totally different. And where Paro is alienated, and Avram is shown the door, and globally, whether it's in On Asia or not, we have unfinished business in Mitzrayim that we have to attend to hundreds of years later because we failed to influence Paro in that first visit. Could you imagine if we had converted Paro to being a monotheist with that first visit? We could have avoided a lot of hardship in some way. When it comes to Avimelech, they become best buds. BFF. Best friends. Does it sound for any of you? What is the second? Best friends? Forever. Yeah, thank you. I can keep up with today. Best friends forever. Remember, when he's accused in Parshas Lech Lecha, he doesn't respond. He's silent. Doesn't explain himself. Paro says, why did you lie to me? And he's silent. Here he says, excuse me, you're accusing me of deception. Have you taken the pulse of this community you're building? Of course I have to lie, because this is promiscuity run amok. Because any woman is fair game, married or not. Look at yourself before looking at me. The least crime here is my lying. That should be the biggest problem, is that I lied to protect my wife from being assaulted and raped, gang raped by all of your rock and yiras elokim by makoma. You would have killed me and taken my wife. So lying is the most noble thing to do here. He doesn't say that to Paro. He turns the tables on Avimelech, as he should. V'gam amna achosi bas avihu. It's not really a lie, because she's a relative, and in fact, ancient Near Eastern documents have actually discovered that the word sister was a way you used to call your wife. Family names are interchangeable. Right? At this point, because my children are older, so my wife calls me Abba. not really her father. You call me that's called Abba, right? Your mother probably would call your father Abba, right? Oh, you lie! He's your husband, not your father. The names are all interchangeable. But Gam Amma, Chosi Basri, we won't tell. Like, it's ridiculous. In the question of it. Vayihika Shehritsu Osir Lakim Beisavi. And we've been traveling a lot, traveling Wilburys. We're on the road a lot, and we're coming into contact with a lot of different cultures, so we have to finesse the situation because she's a susceptible woman. And all of a sudden, no eviction, no expulsions, no incarcerations. Vayikach Avimelech Tzaru Bakar, Vavadim Ushvachos, Vayitein L'Avraham. All of a sudden, there's a big celebration and gifts, and what can I buy for you? And in a stunning, I just want to finish the scene, in a stunning reversal of get out of my land by Yishalcho Osoves, Yishtoves, Kol HaShalom, just let your eyes migrate to the left of the page. Those guys are learning Gittin about Gittin written on the left of the page and the right of the page is a good sugya. Okay? By Yomer Avimelech, Hine, Artzila Fonecha, Batov, welcome! Baruch Haba, where do you want to stay? 5-star hotels. Something happened. We don't have all the information, whatever information we have, or the text, but it's clear that what we had hoped for, the outcome in the interaction with the Paro, occurs with Avimelech, Ulasar Amar, Elif Kosev, Avram Davins for Avimelech, Aispal Avram Elokim, Vayipal Kim is Avimelech. Exact same story. Failure or less than perfect behavior in Lech Lecha. This is the man we've been waiting for in Vayera. Turns sand into a pearl. It's a difficult situation, turns it into a moment of inspiring, and Avimelech becomes the ally. It's a strained alliance, of course. Keep that in mind. But clearly, this is the Avimelech who reappears in Vayera, about whom we read in Rosh Hashanah, Bechisu Bris. The Avimelech who's basically responsible for Beersheba. That's where Beersheba gets the name. And the Sheva Kipsos and the Shvua and the pacts with Avimelech. So Paro becomes public enemy number one, and Avimelech becomes a friend. And a friend who's partially inspired by Avim. Avi, what do you want to say? Okay. Let's continue reading Parshas Vayera. The table's a little bit off. Okay? Remember we talked about Avram's non-intervention? When people's lives are at stake, sidelining himself, Lech Lecha, the War of the Kings. What's the reversal in Vayera? Which episode sounds similar to that? I don't think the table came out properly. Which episode are people's lives at stake and Avram intervenes in a big way? Same people. People of stone are slated for destruction. And Avram challenges the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashofet Kol Haaretz Lo Yaseh Mishpat. How can this happen? Maybe there are 50 people, righteous people. Maybe 40, maybe. Here's Avram going to war with Hashem on behalf of humanity. So somehow the same concept, the same experience of Lech Lecha occurs in Vayera, but the passivity of Lech Lecha all of a sudden is replaced by this interventionism, even if it borders on heresy. For anyone to say, Ashofet Kol Haaretz Lo Yaseh Mishpat, that's Eov talk. That's Eov talk. So what's the difference between Eov and Avram? That's a different story. But how do you question, define justice? How do you even say that? The words are hard for me to say. I'm choking on those words. To say that, Takarish Baruch Ashofet Kol Haaretz Lo Yaseh Mishpat. But it's clear that Vayera is reversing. Remember in Lech Lecha, Avram passes an opportunity to host and embrace and possibly inspire. Where does that become reversed in Parshas Vayera? What? It's a short little scene. It's not a major event in Vayera. Where does he start to host people? What? Well, it's okay. We have more about his family. But there's a pasuk. You can actually cheat and look at the box. Where something's happening, hosting, inspiring. Eshel. Vayita Eshel Bever Sheva, Vayerko Shem,
So we'll talk about the angels a little bit later. Vikra, Sham B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam.
Now he's preaching. And he's hosting.
Yeah, what was this? Eshel's spiritual retreat center. Come have a meal, learn about religion.
Come out on a wheel. I don't know. Some come eat, learn. Chazal make it very, very mechanical. They ate, they benched, and they discussed benching.
Whether he got to them through benching or just sitting around the table talking about, you see, there's a different way to lead your life, and let's display it.
So here, Avram is being Makarov people.
It's an Nefesh HaShasu B'Chara. Well, this is an easy one. Remember the way he treated Hagar? The ignoble way she departed? What does that become reversed? Well, this is an easy one.
Same scene, right? But now it's not just Hagar, but Hagar and her son. It's literally the exact same narrative. Hagar is returned, but now it's Hagar and Yishmael, Hagar plus one, and it becomes even more untenable, and now they both have to be dismissed, and it's even harder because it's his son, not his wife. And now Hashem has to instruct Avram, Kol Asher Tamar Lecha Sar Shema B'Kolah. But, I mean, it's eerie how identical the two parashiyos are. And again, the conclusion is foregone. Hagar can't remain. Yishmael can't remain. Kibi Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazar. So the question is not what will happen, but how it will happen. Go to the back of the second page. This is what we expect in Parshas Lech Lecha. Chayash came out from Baboker, gets up for Vatikin, gets all the food ready, gives her a care package, gives her some spending money, Vigach Lechem, Chemas Mayim, Vayitein El Hagar, Samal Shechma, Vesa Yelid, Vayishalcha. Chazal elaborate this. He walks a few miles with them. According to Chazal, he actually visits them from time to time. He knows where they live. Remember the lonely Hagar who was only visited by angels? Now all of a sudden he knows where she's going and will be involved. And of course, the final reversal between Lech Lecha and Vayera. Remember the questioning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promises about his future, Rama Eda Kirashan, I don't try all that. What's that reversal? Come on, that's the obvious. Where is that reverse in Vayera? Where? Okay. Shem says, take your successor and kill him. He says, okay. Ninani. I'm in. I have no problem. I trust you. Vayera is the direct inversion of Lech Lecha. Almost point for point. Some of the scenes are identical. The famine lying scenes and the Hagar dispatching scenes and the Akeda Mamayda Kirishana scenes. Some of them are just topically related. Intervention, non-intervention. Hosting, inspiring, non-hosting, inspiring. Guys, it's almost as if you're dealing with two different people. They're so different. It's almost as if Parshas Lech Lecha describes one person and Parshas Vayera describes another person. Does this ring any bells in your mind? What do I mean when I say we're describing two different people? What? They are two different people. Who is the hero of Parshas Lech Lecha? Avram. Who is the hero of Parshas Vayera? Avraham. So they are different people. And Avram is imperfect. And Avraham is impeccable. So the question is, how do you go from being an Avram to an Avraham? How can I capture that secret sauce? What is it? What's that magic? So that I can try. Of course, I'll never be Avraham, but in my own little narrative, I can go from being imperfect Moshe to being closer to perfect Moshe. How do I do that? What's the secret sauce? What happens? The answer, Harry, is, well, let's look at what happens right at the juncture between Lech Lecha and Vayera, because it's Avram and Lech Lecha, and it's Avraham and Vayera. How does he transition from Avram to Avraham, from Lech Lecha to Vayera? That is it. That's the factor. That's the X factor. That's how you become an Avraham. What lies right at the juncture between Lech Lecha and Vayera? What? No. Bris Milah. That's literally right at the intersection between the two, and that's where his name changes. By he Avraham ben Tishim Shana, the final Makor. By Avraham ben Tishim Shana, Vayera Hashem el Avram, Vayomer elav ani kel Shakai, Yisalech lefanai v'yei tamim. Oh, good word to describe someone who's trying to become more perfect. You're pretty good until now. Maybe one day Rabbi Tari will make a comedy, make just a highlight the imperfection. But we're talking about a pretty good person. The Lech Lecha, Avram is not a criminal, but you're not yet tamim. You want to be tamim? Vietnam receive in your Venacha. Let's get rid of that Avram guy from Lech Lecha. Let's forge Avraham, a Parshas Vayera. And to do that, Sukkim, I didn't quote, start a bris. Somehow, if we can understand what a bris is, we're going to train ourselves to be Avraham. I don't just mean a bris milah, because that we all had involuntarily. But what is a bris mean? What is the concept of a bris? Because this is Avraham's bris with Hashem. There are two ways to lead a life of religion. One way is inspiration, enthusiasm, deep understanding, passion, emotion, euphoria. It all makes sense. You understand it. Hashemayim esakrim kivod keil. You wake up and you feel Hashem, and your heart leaps into action. And you show up to daven, and you daven with kavana, and you give some tzedakah, and you help out a darkenu boy, and you're nice at breakfast, and you bench with kavana, and it all seems to make sense to you. It's poetry in motion. But you know what? Life doesn't always follow that trajectory. And sometimes you wake up and the sky is bleak. And sometimes your heart is empty. And sometimes you turn the engine and it keeps on turning. And sometimes you just can't generate. And sometimes you even have desires. And sometimes you're really not so interested in dragging your tired body and lining up within certain restraints. And it just... there's a different way to live life, and that's called commitment and covenant. And obligation and duty. And you're there for people, even when you're not excited to be there for people. And you're there for Hashem, even when you're not excited, because you know He's there for you. You'll taste this at a certain point. That's why, when done right, marriage and religion can be so congruent. Marriage is not about romance. Marriage is not about love. Marriage is not about physical attraction, though it can't succeed without all of those. The worst thing that happens, people go with their Rebbe, I'm dating this girl, we've got great chemistry. So you're not marrying a test tube. Well, how do I know? So this is my rule. Okay, guys? Listen carefully. If I never tell it to you again, if you never learn anything from me, this is what you have to learn. Don't marry a girl until you have trouble having kavana during Shemona Esrei, because you're thinking about it too much. If you don't have trouble with kavana, don't get married. You already have problems with kavana. Okay. You know what I mean. Until you reach that stage that you can't have kavana, don't get married. I promise you, please listen to this piece of advice. Good chemistry, my best friend. I give you other people, I'll be your best friend. That's in chemistry. I want the real thing, the physical attraction, the love, the romance, the passion, the dizzy eyes, the googly eyes. Whoa. You know, you've seen if you have older siblings. What happened to my brother who kidnapped him? And, which closet did they stuff him into? Which is this person? Googly eyes, sweet CPC. What happened? You used to have a normal brother or sister. Now they're up the reservation. All this romance stuff. You know what I mean, if you've seen it. You better go through it also. But that's not what marriage is about. Because that comes and goes. The vicissitudes of human emotions, the oscillations of life, hearts change, timing, pressure, stress. Marriage is a commitment and a covenant. Let's build. Let's build a family. Through that, we'll share our resources. Be honest with each other.
no one will get between us. We'll have a secret language, and it's called sexuality, that will allow us to communicate in ways that will help build, will lead to something deeper and larger. I'm sure blissful marriages, most of the time, there's a lot of love. I can't say there's passion every moment. It can't be a constant passion. Teapot just explodes. But people are people. I can assure you, I'm not being invasive of anyone's marriage. I'm sure there are some people in this room whose parents have great marriages, and those whose parents have other. But even if you're the person in the room whose parents have the most blissful Disneyland marriage, if you're that person, I'm sure you've seen them fight and argue. And if not, then you're living in a dream world, or they're living in a dream world. Because people are people. Everyone gets in each other, especially if you live together, so you get in people's nerves from time to time. Totally natural. Doesn't mean you have a bad marriage. But you're committed. There's a covenant, and you're in it for the long term. There are times that Hashem loves you that, quite frankly, you don't deserve to be loved. Think about it. When's the last time you betrayed Hashem? You did something awful. And Hashem was there pumping oxygen, pumping enzymes, pumping. If your body temperature gyrates by 1 degree, I could tell you, I won't obviously, some of the boys who just arrived with the conditions that they have. And you'd be shocked to discover how subtle. It's not like all of a sudden, oh, that boy was in a spacecraft accident, and that's a slight enzyme difference or a slight mutation of one gene or a little less oxygen when that child was being born, or literally, it had nothing to do with you. His mother, when she gave birth to that boy, had a little less oxygen during the delivery. Your mother had a little more oxygen. And every minute that you're betraying HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's there for you. You don't deserve any of it. So man up a little bit. On a day that you don't feel like Hashem deserves your love because you just can't make sense of it or whatever, so you stick within boundaries and you do what's right and you're honest and you're loyal and you're committed, and it's not a religion that gyrates with the mood of the moment and the emotional mindset where you are then. It's just steady. It's day after day, it's the same. Obviously the emotions rise, and then it adds another layer to it when you feel enthusiasm and excitement, but it's not all or nothing. It's not dependent upon it. That's the difference between Avram and Avraham. Avram has a bris. Avram has promises. Avram has mission statements. Avram has potential. And he's very excited about them, and his eyes are all starry-eyed. And he's got all these great... But human beings are mercurial. They rise and they fall. They succeed and they falter. And even someone like Avram, who was one of the greatest, if not the greatest human being to ever live, when it's just about the promises and the potential and the opportunity, you can expect there to be inconsistencies. You can expect there to be errors in judgment, lapses in judgment, whatever you call it. And according to Chazal, even a chet. Not the chet that we commit, but the chet on the scale of Avram. The Avram type, chut hasara chet, where Hashem judges people so severely because of how accomplished they are. But all of a sudden, when you have that confidence that Hashem has made a commitment to me, and I made a commitment to him, and that's it. I won't veer beyond the boundaries, and he doesn't veer beyond the boundaries, and sometimes my emotions are more engaged and sometimes they're less engaged. It's a steadiness, it's a submission, and believe me, it isn't easy. No one's going to walk out, oh, but Tarek can set himself, now I can do it. It takes a lot of time. It's to a degree a surrender of independence, and word commitment. It's really hard in a world of non-commitment. That's really a millennial problem. We need to be committed to anything. Jobs change so often. Locations change so often. User profile. Everything has become very dynamic and flowing in many ways, which are positive. Don't let people ever demonize your world. Oh, our world was perfect. And you live in internet and screens and it's all terrible and you're all devils doomed to perfect.
It's false speak into the side. Everything is balance. Everything is, what are the potentials that have been unleashed? What are the challenges it brings? That's real speak. That's cutting to the core, to the bone. So part of the challenges is there are plenty of opportunities in this dynamic world, but there are the challenges. Lack of space, lack of identity. You know, someone was telling me, a friend of mine in the community, that just the scene that she was privy to, of a grandparent, her parent who passed away, and the children were dividing up the possessions, the silver, the china, the heirlooms, and basically the way she presented it wasn't that no one wanted anything. Like normally, the biggest spots are up. Who's going to get the Seder plate? Who's going to get the thrill in? Who's going to get the dad's baseball glove or whatever? You take it out. There's no need. Like, there's no commitment to items and to people and to very free-flowing. And so you're not going to change this on a dime. You're born independent. And you should feel independent. It's Hashem created you, free will. And how do you transform? It's going to take a long time. And don't be unforgiving of yourself if it doesn't happen right away. But it's a target. How can you become someone that lives a life of commitment? And how can you reconcile that with freedom? And right now, those seem very incongruent to you and irreconcilable. And trust me, they're not. But equally trust me that it's a process. It's a process to work out. I'm still going through the process. I still have moments of inability to reconcile. You know, most of the time, I feel pretty comfortable with that balance, that distillation of my freedom, but I feel like I'm unleashing more of myself. At some level, again, to use the marriage metaphor or the marriage analogy as an example, at some level, you realize that by making a commitment to a marriage, you're availing yourself of greater opportunities on many, many levels. So to unleash some of your freedom and its potential, you need to make commitments. So that model of limiting to unleash should be obvious to you. Even in friendships. Look, those of you who are more successful in friendships, and friendships aren't just eating potato chips while watching the Giants lose another game. It's sharing time and commitment and giving of yourself. And what do you get from that? What would you not have if you were just living in isolation without friends? So you'd be free, right? The particles of a gas are totally free in random and unlimited motion. But what's the price you pay? You're a gas. You have no shape. So even in a molecular structure, bonding yourself to other particles in less rapid motion creates a stability that you abdicate some of the random motions. What's true at a religious level, of course, is true at every level, because Hashem created the universe based on Torah. So we're going to find parallels. We're going to find these parallels. That's the message of Parshas Vayera. And you can't get to that message if Avraham is the heavyweight champion of the world. The second appears a Lech Lecha. You just don't get it. You have to see the growth of the person. And that's the message of the Torah scripting. Not by Chas V'Shalom demonizing Avram. Avram, Parshat Lech Lecha, I can give another whole shiur and fill up a dossier in the file of all of Avram Lech Lecha's accomplishments. But I highlighted the moments he falls short, the reparative moments in Vayera. It allows us to appreciate the transformative effect of the bris and to say, okay, that's a target. How do I undergo that process and internalize a bris dynamic into my life, not just a faith-based and a passion-based dynamic? Okay, guys? Let's go. No one left. Believe it. 6:45. Is that not good?